We have two segments for you today. After a natural disaster, there are several items that many people may not have on hand but are needed for survival and recovery. That's the first segment. In the second segment, we're going to address the warning that Texas authorities gave to their residents in the path of the total eclipse on April the 8th of 24. It panicked some people, so we're going to dig into that. Here's our exercise scenario. It's one day after a Cat 3 hurricane, but it could be any number of natural disasters. We just chose hurricane. We have some damage to the house, but we're able to safely stay in it. There's area-wide flooding, but it hasn't gotten inside the house. Flooding has contaminated the water system. The power's out, the internet's out, and the natural gas service has been shut off just in case there's a leak. The cell surface is out. Now, power crews are beginning to arrive to work on the power grid. Disaster relief agencies have been activated, and they'll arrive tomorrow. Red Cross food delivery will start the day after. Remember, we said it takes a while for help to arrive? Even the government says be prepared to be on your own for 3 days. We're on our own. Let's talk about it.
Hi, guys. Welcome to Practical Prepping. Today is March 21st, 2024, and this is episode 457. This is the prepping podcast with no bunkers, no zombies, and no alien invasions. Just practical prepping, where we believe that stuff happens. So we need to stay prepared, and that's why we're here, to help you get prepared. Hi, guys. I'm Krista.
And I'm Mark. And if you'd like the expanded notes for this episode, go to practicalprepping.info/457. And if you aren't receiving the Practical Prepping newsletter, go to practicalprepping.info and click on Free PDF. And you'll receive the free Getting Started in Prepping PDF, and you'll be added to the newsletter. Can we ask you to do us a favor?
Please.
Would you share the podcast with friends? Mm-hmm. We're growing. The Facebook group is growing. And we would like to share that with even more folks. Having the items that we're going to talk about today on hand can significantly enhance our preparedness and our resilience in the aftermath of a natural disaster. And these things can help us navigate the challenges of recovery even more efficiently.
Now, we're going to start with what everyone knows is my favorite topic, and that's water.
Spaghetti.
No water. We're talking about prepping. You behave. Okay?
See how she treats me.
You should see that face right now. Oh. Anyway, back to topic. Clean drinking water may become scarce after a natural disaster, and basically that's due to contamination or just the demand that mm-hmm. it can have on the systems. So having a case or two of bottled water is very important for the grab and go. And it's good to have while you're working or even sharing with some helpers that may come and, you know, assist you with your disaster. So the government explains that 1 gallon per person per day is the minimum, and it really is the minimum. So how long do you expect it to take for the water system to be restored? You're going to have to aim for that amount of time or even more.
Right. So, if you're expecting it to be 2 weeks, you're going to need 14 gallons per person.
And that's, again, a bare minimum. That's just like a drinking amount. That does not take into account cooking or hygiene.
Addition to this, you need some skill and knowledge of water purification.
Absolutely, because you may have to source water that's not clean.
Yeah, you may step out the front door and dip it out of the flood water.
There you go.
And that's really a good place to get your toilet water.
Well, you can bucket up, you know, the flood water and don't have to pure. If you're going to just pour it right down the commode.
Exactly. But if you have to drink it, mm-hmm. there are ways to do that.
Such as boiling, of course, that's a tried and true method. There's also chemical disinfectant and sanitation, and there's even bleach tablets, water purification tablets that you can purchase. A lot of people like to use the tablets because they're just easier to carry mm-hmm. than, say, a bottle of bleach, and also using a water filter, like we have our Pro One water filter that we use on our counter. Berkey's, work for that same purpose.
Right. You need to have a way to transport water. It can be a collapsible water container or even a 5-gallon bucket. But this allows you to transport additional water for drinking, cooking, and hygiene purposes. As we were talking there about toilet flushing, you can use this from collected rainwater if the system's completely down, or you can literally use that flood water for the toilets.
Yeah, a lot of people may not realize that your commode will actually operate if you pour water down into it.
Yes.
You know, it's not electrical or anything like that.
And you don't have to pour it into the tank. No. You can pour it straight into the toilet.
Right into the bowl. Right.
So great way to go with that. Next thing we're going to need is some food. Now here we're going to say store what you eat so that you can eat what you like.
It makes no sense to store food you're not going to consume.
Yeah, there is not a can of zucchini in this house.
Well, I don't know that they can zucchini.
Well, whatever. God made the stuff for compost.
You may have guessed that Mark is not a zucchini fan.
No, I'm not. I am not. I will not be found in Zucchini Palace.
If you're hungry enough, I'll bet you do.
Well, I guess I could. Now, we went out to eat, celebrate brother-in-law's birthday the other day, and we went to a Japanese restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the vegetables that I had, or the vegetable medley that I had some zucchini in it.
It did.
And tell them what my plate looked like when I finished.
It was clean as a whistle, except for pieces of zucchini that he had pulled out and pushed aside so as not to eat it.
Yep. But anyway, you probably don't want to be eating exclusively the 25-year storage foods at this point.
Yeah, this is not the disaster to break out the long-term storage, because once you open all that, you know, it's opened. Use your shorter term.
It's also a lot more expensive, and their purpose is to be able to store it for that long.
Right.
It's not to have to use for a 1-week emergency.
Exactly.
So really, you need to be storing a minimum of 2 to 4 weeks for your family, at least in our hurricane scenario. But in addition to having the food, you need means to cook that food.
Yeah, something like a portable stove, a camping grill, a regular grill, gas grill, charcoal grill, smoker, solar oven, open fire pit, or even a rocket stove. Some way to be able to heat food that may not involve your stove. If you're out of power, your electric stove is just not
exactly
your air fryers or your microwave.
In our scenario, the gas is turned off
exactly
by the city.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to have those things. Now, a caution here. Do not in any way use an open flame cooking system inside your house.
No, certainly not.
The exception is the butane camp stove. You can use the butane inside safely. Now, you can use the propane if you will get close to an open window. You need airflow there.
But we'd prefer you use the propane outside.
We would prefer.
Yeah.
But do not use a grill inside an enclosed area.
Mm-hmm.
Even I saw where there was some carbon monoxide poisoning. They used it in the carport, and it was closed on 3 sides. It had one side open, and they still wound up with carbon monoxide poisoning.
Oh, my.
So keep that in mind.
Also, think about your power options. So you've got no electricity coming from the city. That portable generator that you've been thinking about, this is the good time to have it, because it'll provide electricity for your essential devices and appliances, your refrigerator, freezer, perhaps washer, dryer, dishwasher, that sort of thing, when those power lines are down. And be sure that you educate yourself on the use of the power generator and what that means in terms of the electrical with the city and the utility. There are some do's and don'ts.
And it's a very good idea if you're using that, unless you're just plugging the generator straight into your refrigerator.
Yeah.
But if you're plugging into any part of the house, turn off that main breaker.
Yes.
We love the linemen, and we don't want them getting hurt.
So jump over here and talk to us about a use of a battery or an inverter.
Well, it's a good backup system, and you can even use a car battery if necessary. Now, a lot of people that are doing some type of off-grid, they're using a much heavier battery, but you can use the battery out of your car if you need to.
Hmm.
And the battery out of the car and an inverter, you can run your medical devices such as a CPAP.
I know you've done that.
I've done that.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much what I had to do at the hunting club years ago.
Right.
was we took a car battery down there. We actually had two that we rotated them out. And it would run my CPAP for well over a week. And that was with us using other things as well. Mm-hmm. But you can also charge your cell phones off of that.
Okay, cool.
Which leads me to power banks and or solar-powered phone chargers. Communication is vital during and after a disaster. So have a way to charge your cell phone. They may work, they may not. But if they're not working because of overloaded circuits, use that text message feature because you can get through so much easier. And you also don't have to keep sending. Once you send that message, that system will pick it up and it will continue trying until it's able to get it through.
And I understand it takes less bandwidth.
Much less bandwidth to do that. Now, the power banks can charge a phone a couple of times. So have multiple. We've got multiple here at the house. They've gotten so inexpensive now. Mm-hmm. We've got a few on the website under featured items that you can look at. You can pick them up at the big box stores. Any number of big box stores carry those.
You could order them from Amazon from our banner on the website. Yeah. So that helps us out too.
It really, really does. Now, the solar charging bank takes a while. It's not a fast charge with the what you get there. And, and the solar is to charge the power bank. And so you're charging your phone from within the power bank, but it may take a couple of days of sitting in the sun to totally recharge that thing. So don't depend just on that. But you can use your car charger.
Okay.
Now, some require that the ignition be on, but you don't have to run the engine. And if you'll check in a lot of these newer vehicles, some of those may be wired direct. In our Jeep, we have a line run directly to the battery to run our ham radio on because it does draw a fair amount of power. And we've added a lighter plug to that line so we can plug directly in. And we don't have to leave the engine running or even the ignition on. So take a look at that and see which one of those might be wired direct. And that's where you can plug your car charger in.
Something else to think about is to have some emergency cash on hand. Because if the power's out and the internet's down, that means that the ATMs and the credit card systems most likely are going to be unavailable. Mm-hmm. Even if a store in the neighborhood opens, say like a gas station or a convenience store, they may be able to only process cash only. Mm-hmm. So do have some emergency cash, and usually low denominations, the ones, fives, and tens. You don't want $100 bills on something like this. You want to be able to have small denomination cash, and particularly if you frequent a mom-and-pop store or some of these community convenience store gas stations.
Yeah, one of the local community stores here in North Alabama stayed open during the snowstorm. Now, there were times they were not able to take debit cards because of outages, but they opened. They walked to the store every day and opened it because, as they said, that community depended on them.
Right, for sure.
You want to have some emergency repair items, and some of these we just need to have here anyway, but two of the things is tarps and or plastic sheeting. You can build a temporary shelter with that. You can cover damaged roofs with that. The cheaper ones are better for this purpose. The lightweight blue tarp. And when you go through communities after a tornado, you see a lot of blue roofs. That's the roofs that had damage. But you want some wood strips there for attaching that tarp to the roof. That helps you to pull it tighter. When you nail it down, it helps to keep it tighter and less likely to pull away from the nails. If you nail that tarp directly to the roof with no wood, just nail it through the tarp into the roof, the wind can pull that tarp away from that nail.
Oh, yeah.
It just rips it open.
Tear it right away.
So you take that wood strip and you roll that wood strip in the end of the tarp where you're going to nail it down.
Okay, so it kind of secures it two ways.
Exactly. Yeah. And if it's rolled over, it's not going to pull out from those nails.
Smart.
We put a ton of them on after a few hurricanes and a lot of tornadoes.
So smart. That's practical prepping right
there.
Is.
Have some duct tape.
You know it.
duct tape is incredibly versatile.
You can just about build anything out of it.
You can build anything out of it. You can tape somebody in a chair.
I'm not sure that that's necessary.
I had a window broken out of my pickup one time with through a burglary of my truck. Guy broke into my truck and broke the window. And until I could get the window repaired, and this was back with the vent windows. He broke out the vent window to reach
in. Oh, that little triangle at the front.
The triangular one. So I just built me one out of duct tape.
There you go.
And it took me a couple of days to be able to get it replaced. I was working night shift at the time. And so I just made a window out of it. And I saw one pass by not long ago, pass by me, that the entire driver's side rear passenger window was nothing but duct tape.
Okay.
So you can use it. You can make all kinds of good stuff out of it.
Also, having some basic tools and repair supplies, something along the lines of wrenches, various sizes of wrenches, screwdrivers, you know, both the flathead, the Phillips head, and the square head, hammers, saws, nails, screws, your basic tools, because you'll find these will be extremely handy if you can stay in your home but have to deal with some moderate damage that may have occurred on your property.
Or you have to put the tarp on the roof.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
A lot of good options there. Multi-tool or some type of Swiss Army knife. It's a handy on-body tool. You can use it for tightening, cutting, opening cans, performing minor repairs. And the neat thing is it can often save you a trip back to the tool shed. I carry one all the time with me when I'm out here working around the house. And there are times that I need to tighten a bolt or something, and I'm often able to do that with my multi-tool rather than going back to the garage, finding a wrench, and going back and working on it.
Super de-duper handy.
Yes, it is.
Also have a lights-out kit. You know, the hurricane that struck Concord, North Carolina when I was living there in 1989 took place after midnight. So in the dark of night, the hurricane winds came blowing through the inland area of Concord, and our power went out about 3:30 that morning. So we were in the dark to start with, and then we were really in the dark, except for the lightning. And so having a lights out kit, something that has like a chemical light stick, obviously flashlights, LED or propane lanterns, even a headlamp, and all sorts of extra batteries to help power those things, because you'll find if you're in a multi-day power outage, you're going to have a lot of chronic nightfall, and you're going to use up a lot of battery and lantern power. So make sure that you double or even triple up on those batteries.
Now let's get into some personal protective items. And no, I'm not talking about handguns and shotguns for shooting looters.
That's a whole different deal.
It's a whole different deal. But one of my favorite, and I don't want to go into a hurricane-affected area without plenty of insect repellent.
Boy, that's the truth.
Especially after hurricanes.
It seems to stir up mosquitoes and gnats.
It does. And I did a little research on that. From the time the egg is laid until it is a flying, biting insect is 2 to 3 weeks. That period between egg being laid, the larva, and then all the way to the flying, biting insect, 2 to 3 weeks. And I got to looking back, and it was about 2 weeks after the hurricanes that we went in to do what we did as disaster relief. Now, there were other teams went in doing other things ahead of us. We were 2 to 3 weeks after the hurricane. And, you know, we tease about the mosquito being the state bird of Alabama.
Right.
Well, Florida's got some mosquitoes that are bigger than birds.
Yeah, they carry.
They're something
else.
When
they land on you, they would go, poof.
Yep. You know it when they bit you. So put that insect repellent on that list. Here's another one. Sunscreen. If you're working outside a lot during the recovery process at your house or your neighbors, you want to avoid that sunburn.
Yeah, I mean, that's miserable even when you don't have an emergency. But when you do have a disaster that you're dealing with and you've got enough stress, you could actually become sick from too much sun exposure.
I've seen that.
They call it sun poisoning.
I've seen that.
And you can be sick like you have the flu, but it's more miserable because you have burnt skin.
Yep.
And so wear those boonie hats and put that sunscreen on. And don't forget exposed places like tops of the ears, tips of the nose, because those are some of the areas that get the most exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people that end up with melanoma have them on their nose and their ears because they forget.
And that's where my uncle had them. And he had been a farmer since the late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So he lost part of a nose. He lost part of his ears.
No kidding.
All because of melanoma.
Sun exposure.
But once he had the first one, he never went outside the door without having his sunscreen on.
There you go.
This is the time to have some sturdy shoes or boots. It's not the time for tennis shoes or flip-flops. There are a lot of nails, broken glass, debris, and those nails will go through those tennis shoes where it might not go through a solid-soled boot.
Mm-hmm, like a work boot, steel-toed boots.
That, especially if it's got a steel shank in it,
mm-hmm.
that keeps them from going through.
That's actually just good to have on hand anyway. Mm-hmm. Just you never know what you might be stepping through. Thinking of foot protection makes me think about hand protection. Having some heavy work gloves, because sometimes you'll have to move splintery boards, things that have nails in them. And we're not talking about the thin, flimsy, like little gardening gloves. Not mm-hmm. that. We're talking about heavy duty leather or some kind of, you know, thick material.
The heavy split leather gloves are great for this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Also want some safety goggles on hand. Doesn't mean you have to be wearing them the whole time, but you may be getting into debris and dust and other hazards. Mm-hmm. And that stuff hurts when it gets in your eyes.
Especially if you're exposed to some fiberglass mm-hmm. insulation that may have come out of an attic. That stuff is tiny and it's hard to mm-hmm. see, but when it gets in your eyes and your nose and your mouth, ooh. So yeah, having those eye protection and ear protection, if you can do it, to keep fiberglass out of your face.
And if you're having to deal with that fiberglass, that insulation that came out, it's good to have masks for mm-hmm. the dust, for the fiberglass. Or even if it's been a while since the hurricane and you're working around mold.
Yeah, mold can set up pretty quickly.
You need those masks.
Have some hand sanitizer as well, that in the field kind of hand sanitizer. And use it often when you're dealing with all of that debris. You're going to upend a lot of bacteria and fungus, germs, even viruses can release from ground and from earth and from organic sources. So hand sanitizing and dabbing it on your face too as well, mm-hmm. because a lot of times you'll be touching your face.
Now this sounds kind of odd coming from a hurricane aspect, but it partially depends on where you are, but some emergency blankets. And I'm talking here, even if you're in South Florida, it's good to have a few of those emergency blankets. Now it's designed to retain heat. Really where I'm coming from here is if you have an injured person that you can't move and you need to preserve that body heat, wrap them in one of those Mylar-type emergency blankets. They're cheap. Throw a couple of them in the bag. You can also make a shelter out of them.
Hmm.
But their primary purpose there is to maintain body temperature during outdoor sheltering or emergencies.
Is that like to keep them from going into shock?
To help keep them from going into shock.
I see.
Exactly. And I have had to work injuries where it was raining, and it's a good thing to be able to throw that over them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let it fall, you know, on their face.
Of course.
You may need to keep a hand.
Be sensible.
But do that.
Here's something to think about, too, is when you're talking about communications, you can communicate beyond a cell phone. Sometimes you may find that you are trapped in the rubble.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can have an emergency whistle, if you can even think to yourself before any disaster hits, if you know you're in the path, and a lot of people realize it, go ahead and put that emergency whistle, if it's on a lanyard or a cord around your neck. And if, God forbid, you get trapped in the rubble and you've got breath, you can take that breath and you can whistle, because your whistling will go farther than you trying to call out if you're very weak and can't call out.
And you don't have to whistle continuously.
No. Mm-hmm.
If you just whistle a couple of times every 10 or 15 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and if someone's coming around, if you hear voices, get on your whistle. Let them know somebody's trapped in here. But when we're looking at emergency communications, one of the great things that we need is an emergency radio with NOAA weather band on it, or weather alert. And that's crucial before the event. But even after it's passed on through, It helps us to get weather updates and emergency information.
Right, because they can rely on battery operation. Mm-hmm. Even if the power's out, your NOAA weather radio will still work.
Exactly. And you want some type of radio that you can get AM, FM, battery-operated radio. Our favorite is the Kato KA5000. There are several, and we've put those on the website under featured items, and I'll include that link in the show notes. But that is something extremely important to have. Now, we have gifted that Kato KA5000 to family members. Mm-hmm. It's a good radio. And she actually depends on it not only for weather alerts, but she listens to Alabama football games on it. So it's more than just a weather radio. But you can dial into FM stations, you can get TV stations, and you can get info there. We will put that on the website, but that is practicalprepping.info/feature. Talk a little bit more about two-way communications.
Yeah, we touched on this a few minutes ago. You know, your cell phone, and often right immediately after a disaster event has happened, it could take weeks for your cell phone mm-hmm. to be back to normal operation. So thinking about a radio, of course, Mark and I both are licensed ham radio operators. It's called amateur radio. It is an FCC licensing type of communication. You do have to test and license for it, but you can also work with GMRS or CB that don't require a test, I believe.
Exactly. Right. Now, the GMRS does require a license.
Right.
But it's like $35 for 10 years.
And you don't have to test for it.
You do not have to test for it. You go online, you get it, and you're good to go. And it's good for the whole family. So you can use that one license for the entire family. But really, whatever you've got, a lot of folks have got CB radios still hanging around. Anything that you can use to contact someone outside the impact area.
Sure.
Now, you could also have a neighborhood radio plan. And you could do this with GMRS. You could do it with FRS. And it's for your neighbors nearby. Because with a handheld GMRS, you're going to get a mile or so. With an FRS, you're probably going to get about a half a mile. But it's a way that your neighbors can check on each other and have them for this type of situation. And they're inexpensive. So you need some type of community or neighborhood radio system.
Well, I've also known of organizations that'll pull together mm-hmm. and a church or a school or a club or something like that that'll pull together and have a GMRS and work out the range on that is not as far as say a ham radio, because a ham radio can literally be heard around the world if need be,
depending on what band you're on.
That's a whole different episode. Mm-hmm. But ham radio is going to be more far-reaching. You know, if your disaster takes place in Biloxi, Mississippi, and you need to get word to, you know, Omaha, Nebraska, to your nearest kin, ham radio is going to be the way to go for that.
It can do it, but you're going to need the right equipment, and you're going to need a general license or above.
Right.
To be able to operate on that. You're not going to be able to reach from Biloxi to Oklahoma on one of the $25 handheld radios.
Exactly.
Not going to happen.
Yeah.
Another thing that you can look at for communications is social media.
Absolutely.
We had lunch with a couple recently, and during the AT&T phone outage, when it was out over so much of the country.
Yeah, that was not too long ago.
It was not too long ago. And she related that the only way they had to communicate with each other, or were able to communicate with each other, was through social media.
Hmm.
They were able to get where they were. They could get internet access, but they could not make phone calls, text, anything like that.
I see.
So that's something not to overlook. If you're in the impact area and you can get on to a social media, check yourself safe. Let your family know mm-hmm. that you're safe, which leads us to the emergency contact list and a plan. All of our family has our contact list. We put that together with all the family members on both sides. It has their name, address, their phone number, has their email. for those that it's appropriate. It has their ham radio call signs mm-hmm. and the repeaters that are in their area.
Very important.
Particularly the EchoLink repeaters.
Which
EchoLink uses internet connection between the repeaters. So with a handheld radio, we can reach a nearby EchoLink repeater, punch in the right code, use the internet to get to, let's say, North Carolina, where we have a son-in-law who is a ham radio operator, mm-hmm. and we can contact them through the internet. We can use HF to get to one person outside the contact area. That's all we really need. And then that person activates our contact plan. That person calls two people, and each of them have the list, and they go down their respected sides of the family.
Right. This way, you don't feel like you're having to call 94 people
exactly
to tell them the same message. You can call one, maybe two folks, and then it just spreads out from there.
They've all got the list, and okay, I've called these four. You pick up here and call these next four. Mm-hmm. So it's a quick and easy way to do that. And don't forget the Facebook or X or Instagram. Whatever way you can use to make contact. And if you want the show notes to this segment, it is at practicalprepping.info/457. Let's get to segment two.
The warning by these Texas officials relating to the upcoming solar eclipse. We've done a little research and we have found that Texas authorities have warned people to stock up on things like gasoline and groceries if they're along the line of totality, which is the path of the total eclipse that's going to occur here in North America on April the 8th, 2024. You can actually view a map at science.nasa.gov, and that will show you the exact path of the eclipse, when it starts and when it concludes. We will also put that link in our show notes and on our Facebook page.
Now, the warning has some folks a bit panicked about what may happen.
Dun, dun, dun.
And some conspiracy theorists are blowing it up, too.
Dun, dun, dun.
Some things like, this is the beginning of the end.
Well, there's always going to be somebody that's sure. going to say that.
Or they expect a major attack during the eclipse.
Yeah, I know.
It's a solar eclipse.
It's a naturally occurring phenomenon that is a bit rare in a way, but that's pretty much the totality yeah. of it. It's a solar eclipse. That's it.
So relax.
Enjoy it.
It's happened many times before, yeah. and hopefully it's going to happen many times in the future. But let's address what the warnings really mean. Mm-hmm. We want you comfortable with this. We want you to understand it. We don't want anybody panicked or even concerned over this.
Nope.
If you live in that path, there's a couple of things you might ought to do, but it's not the beginning of the end.
Nope.
And it's not going to cause worldwide destruction. Mm-mm. But now what's happening here is many of the cities and towns along the path of the total eclipse are under 15,000 in population.
Kind of a small
They're small towns.
Yeah.
And many of them are expected to swell to 80 to 100,000 people during the total eclipse.
That's a lot to put in some small towns.
Exactly.
You know.
I was asked a couple of days ago if you and I were going somewhere to see the solar eclipse.
Mm-mm.
We might if she didn't already have work for that day.
Yeah, but one of us is retired, and guess what? It's not me.
But those cities are expected to have 60 to 100,000 people come into some of them for that.
I wonder if the Airbnb has gotten blown up because of this, with people wanting to rent
that
homes.
And hotels
yeah,
and everything
know,
else.
At this late date, there won't be a hotel for 150 miles.
Probably not. This is interesting. The duration of the total eclipse is 3.5 to 4 minutes.
Okay.
But it's a really spectacular few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The duration of partial eclipse will be around 2.5 hours along the path of totality.
Sure. Okay.
What is going to happen is that there's going to be a huge influx of people.
A lot of folks have a lot of time off, it seems like.
Yeah, or take vacation or whatever. But there's going to be a lot of people go watch a total eclipse.
So there's going to be some serious traffic delays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two-lane roads are going to get swamped probably with traffic so backed up. Some of these roads may get clogged up and closed.
Oh, yeah. Now, two-lane roads serve many of these cities and towns going in and out of town.
Some of these towns, that's the only road they've got.
Yeah. And stop signs and traffic lights are going to cause it to back up even more.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to come up and they're going to be waiting 30 to 45 seconds for the traffic light to turn. And it's just going to back the traffic up even more.
Sure, it will.
Even stop signs. And even the small fender bender could tie it up for quite a while.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, there could be some delay in EMS response.
Ooh, hadn't thought about that.
And there will undoubtedly be some EMS responses during this.
Well, yeah, you got that
There's a number of things going on there. And part of it is because of the additional traffic.
Right.
And the increase in call volume.
And just think, too, every news organization is going to be sending
They're going to be scattered out all over the place. But
people.
Keep in mind that these infrastructures were designed to handle 15,000 to 20,000 people.
And not all at 1 minute.
And not at all at 1 minute, but I mean residents. And here we are going to quadruple to 5-6 times the size of that city.
Mm.
In 1 day.
Right.
And that's going to cause some interruptions in cell service.
It surely will.
That system was designed for a population of around 15,000, maybe 20,000.
Yeah, they're not going to necessarily have, you know, million watt towers out there in the middle of the farmland.
And so suddenly there's 60 to 100,000 people trying to use cell phones.
Right.
And the cell towers will become overloaded.
I think we'll have some outages. You know, not too long ago, there was that AT&T outage, and they ran it back to say that it was a glitch in their hardware and their systems.
Yeah, this is just going to be pure overload.
Yeah.
It's just like happens after natural disasters, mm-hmm. anything like that.
Right.
So be patient. Have patience that day.
Mm-hmm.
And use your text messaging if you can, if you need to get something through. That's probably the best way you're going to get messages out. Now, there'll be some gas stations selling out of gasoline.
Yeah, they can only have so much that they can store in their tanks.
And it's going to be due to the influx of people.
Yeah.
The influx of vehicles.
Oh, my.
So there are going to be some gas stations selling out of gasoline.
Yeah, and everything else they've got in there to sell.
And there may be some temporary shortages in the grocery store. Many people, you mentioned the Airbnbs, they're going to have that Airbnb, and they're going to go to the store to get groceries.
Right. But so is 100,000 other people.
So is whoever else was lucky enough to get an Airbnb or a hotel room.
Bring your groceries with you.
I would say bring it. Well, is a good point if you're going, but this is really for the folks that are in Texas.
Yeah, that
to be aware.
Yeah.
I mean, you live there. You live down the street from it.
If you're not a prepper in one of these small towns in Texas, you better get to be in one right about now.
Many may want to buy sandwich makings for the day. They're there for the day, so they're going to pick up some lunch meat and mustard or mayonnaise and some bread. And that aisle's going to sell out pretty quick.
Right.
There'll be some overcrowding at the restaurants, the hotels, the campgrounds, public spaces,
parks,
anywhere that people can come in and park and watch that. Now, if we had a camper and the time off, we'd probably find a place to watch it.
Sure.
And we'd be one of those 100,000 people that are there. Now, there will be some impact on public services. We mentioned the EMS, but also on law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, managing such a large influx of traffic can be difficult on the law enforcement.
Yeah, you're talking about a small town with a handful
of
peace officers.
They may have 20, and they're going to want all 20 there because it's going to take more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So be patient if you're there. And that's going to lead to some strain on the local budgets with the overtime for some of the city services.
That's true.
Including trash collection.
Oh, there's going to be so much garbage.
Now, you've got all these people there, and most of those people are going to be trying to do the right thing and put their trash in appropriate trash bins, but even those are likely going to be filled over capacity.
Right.
So it's going to take people with overtime to go out and collect the trash.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's going to impact those additional police officers. It's going to affect their overtime, possibly EMS. Now, Texas officials are telling the folks to have what you need before all these folks get to town.
And what's that date again?
April the 8th.
April the 8th. Okay.
Now, they aren't saying stock up with a month's worth of food.
No, no, no.
They are saying have enough to get through until the shelves are restocked and the gas pumps are refilled.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a couple of days.
Maybe have a power outage plan, too, because this may overload electricity.
It could. I had not considered that, but be able to make it a few days.
Yeah, I think we're about to have some practical preppers figure out how they're going to do, mm-hmm. you know, on this April 8th.
They aren't saying that people need to store extra gasoline.
Oh, okay.
But what they are saying is have a full tank going into this.
Okay.
There will be some fuel outages, but they'll get resupplied.
Sure they will.
But it may take a couple of days, so mm-hmm. don't go into this thing with, you know, an eighth of a tank of gas.
Yeah.
Go into it with a full tank.
That's a good game plan.
So here's the game plan.
Mm-hmm.
Top off your fuel tank.
Yep.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a prepper, you should already have enough stored to get you through at least a few days, but top off what you might want. If you're not a prepper, go to the grocery store and buy groceries for a week, somewhere around April the 5th.
Or sooner.
Well,
it's the 8th. Yeah,
but go.
People will be coming in ahead of time.
They will, but you should, the 5th, you should be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if you want to go the 4th, that's a good idea, mm-hmm. but go ahead and stock up at least enough for a week. Now, if you're going to have an eclipse party or a barbecue.
Right.
Get your meat and supplies early.
Yep.
Don't wait.
Yep. Yep.
If you can, that day, stay off the roads and enjoy it from your backyard with your favorite snacks and drinks.
Have fun.
And if you go out to eat, expect there to be some long wait times. It's going to get crowded.
But again, folks, it's an eclipse. It's really nothing new. And if you've never seen one, it is pretty cool. I have seen several lunar eclipses. I have actually witnessed one total solar eclipse, and it was an awesome experience.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is, particularly at that time of the day, if you're, you know, during the middle of the day, you can expect the temperature to drop 15 to 20 degrees because the sunlight and the heat and the radiation is being blocked.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually tell there's a different color to the air and an overcast that happens. And it was quite interesting to experience that.
It's really neat.
We don't believe that it's going to be the harbinger of doom and gloom. We think it's going to be a solar eclipse. And like I said, you know, it's not the first one and it won't be the last.
And it's going to be some snarly traffic. It's yeah. going to be some empty gas pumps.
Yeah.
And it's going to be some pretty well ravished grocery store aisles.
Well, if you're traveling to go enjoy this, pack your patience and just be a little bit generous with mm-hmm. your patience, because you're going to be one of tens of thousands of people that are going to want to enjoy this. So go expecting to have to rely on your own devices for your food and your shelter and your gasoline. And don't forget
to pack water to
yeah,
take with you.
Have some water.
That's something very, very important. Hope you've learned something from this. Now, today's cup of coffee comes from Jill.
Hey, Jill, we sure appreciate that.
And if you receive value from the podcast, would you help us by giving back a little? First, you can buy us a cup of coffee like Jill. Second, you can start your Amazon shopping from our website. This really does help us out.
Do it.
And it costs you nothing extra, but it pays us a small commission on qualifying purchases.
Mm-hmm.
And as we said, it really does help out. And you'll find the links to both of those at practicalprepping.info on the front page. And as Krista always says,
stuff happens. You got to stay prepared.
And we'll see you next time.